completely answered the question, which actor's the most undeserved success?
Yeah.
I think this is before he edited it. Mm. He's misspelled undeserved as unreserved. So, like, which actor is about to get fired from Hollywood? Basically, he's got the most unreserved success.
Unreserved? No, that's like unreserved approval from the.
I guess.
They're holding nothing back. They love him.
Yeah. So who's got the most Jennifer Lawrence
unreserved success?
Yeah.
I don't think Chris Pratt's done anything bad.
Oh, yeah.
I literally can't think of anything.
The Magnificent Seven.
Did that get bad reviews?
From me it did, yeah. Cause it was boring.
Well, because you're shit at liking westerns.
No, I like westerns. No, I don't. What am I on about? Westerns are boring. They're all slow.
They're good.
They're all set in the Wild West.
Some of them are bad, because some of them are quite racist.
That's the only reason they're bad.
Yeah.
Because they're quite racist.
Pretty much. If there's going to be a reason for a film to be bad, I would say racism is a good criticism.
Chris Pratt? Yeah, I'd say that's a good unreserved success.
Unreserved, yeah.
Who else?
I'm trying to think.
I don't think Jennifer Lawrence has made anything bad. You struggle to think who she is, aren't you?
I don't know.
Yeah.
But if hypothetically there was someone called Jennifer Lawrence who had been in potentially a series that had run longer than maybe it should have, that would be a reservation that I would put on the success of said hypothetical person.
I forgot about the last three Hunger Games. I forgot they existed. Even after reading all the books and hating them in exactly the same way I hated the films.
Yeah.
Because it's like the first one, fucking great. First one, amazing. Second one, whoa, where's this going? Third one, oh my God, this is so boring.
It's a criticism that's, you know, being in a film that might have run a little bit longer than it should have.
Yeah.
It's a criticism not many people get to boast. I can think of basically her and R2-D2. as people who've been in every film of a series that have run on a little too long.
Both cute robots that go beep.
Yeah,
that's what they do.
I don't know if you've ever been around J-Lo, but she...
beep.
You just have to boop at the nose.
Beep.
Every time as well. Doesn't get bored. Doesn't get bored of it. Every single time you boop her nose, she'll say beep.
When she gets shot by a laser blast as well, she electric just flies everyone and she goes, wow!
That is also true.
Yeah, it's incredible. It's so, like, wouldn't think she was capable of it.
The thing is
happened.
With her, she goes, wow! Why?
Why? Why did you shoot me?
Yeah.
The laser. Where'd you get a laser from?
I think, you know, it cuts away from R2-D2 before he does that, but he also does that. Wow! Why would you shoot a robot?
Yeah.
Like me?
Yeah. Okay, so we've got one from Maxim Suveri at The Weirdo Maxim on Twitter. That is Runaway Mom.
Runaway Mom.
This sounds like it could be pretty dark.
Yeah.
Not gonna lie.
Huh.
I'm also thinking, like, it could be, like, you know, like an indie flick.
But it's gotta be a family film.
It's gotta be a family film.
So indie flick, you don't see many indie family films unless they're stop motion. Because, inevitably, the people who make the stop motion film are way more in love with the medium than the genre.
Mm. Runaway Mom. I'm thinking.
I'm just thinking. Sorry, I would help, but I'm just thinking about the last stop motion film that I was prominent, and I would say it's Kubo and the Two Strings, which great film with messages for the family.
Yeah.
did it pander and therefore get any success? Absolutely not.
Yeah. So Runaway Mom. Well, who are we casting as the mom first?
Let's say Barbara Windsor.
Barbara Windsor?
Yeah.
Peggy Mitchell from EastEnders.
And
the Carry On
movies. And the Carry On movies, where she's better known.
Barbara Windsor, she did exercises and her top came off.
Yep.
Yeah, that's
pretty much.
Carry On Camping,
yep.
I think.
Carry On. She was in Carry On Everything, and she's got big boobs. That is Barbara Windsor.
She's in Carry On Everything, got big boobs, Barbara Windsor.
So I want to say that, like, oh man, I was gonna say because the problem is she's of a certain age where her being a mom would mean that her child was an adult, which means that it would really be Runaway Gran. So maybe we should cast someone else.
Yeah,
but she will keep her in mind for Gran and Gramps.
Yeah.
Save the Galaxy.
Yeah, yeah. Oh yeah. Let's do it. Someone young. I'm thinking. Someone like one of the SNL people, like.
I want to say.
Kate McKinnon.
No. What's her name? Out of New Girl.
Zooey Deschanel.
Zooey Deschanel. I think she's just hit the age category where she could be a mom.
Okay. Yes, what's she running away from?
Runaway Mom, I think that...
I think the runaway is metaphorical.
No, no,
I think she's just weird.
No, I think she's forgotten she's got children. Like, basically, she's a single mother, right? She's got these two kids, played by fucking take your pick from...
Stranger Things. One of the Stranger Things kids.
And then...
Doesn't matter.
And then... Whatever her name is, punch out lady, the little girl from Stranger Things,
Millie Bobby Brown,
punch out lady.
I don't think she punches anyone in Stranger Things.
For some reason, I have it in my head that her name had something to do with boxing.
No, Millie Bobby. No,
I don't know. Anyway, so Millie Bobby Brown and the other one from Stranger Things. And so Zooey Deschanel's single mom, but she's a scientist. And she's working late at the lab, and the kids are, and this is where the themes are going to come in. The kids are like, oh, you never spend enough time with us. We never see you. You're always working late at the lab. And she's like, I've got to get this Alzheimer's medication out because it's going to save thousands of people's relationships with their parents and grandparents.
Yeah.
Right? But one of the tests she does explodes and backfires and makes her forget that she's got children. So when these two... So she, like...
No.
She goes off on a... tries to go off on a holiday.
I've got it. One of the tests explodes, transporting her to another dimension.
There's no running away there.
But they all think she's ran away. I think it's right.
But then there's no interaction then with the kids at all.
Yeah, there is. Like I'm thinking, like, it keeps cutting, and we find out that the relationship with the kids is very strained, and the kids are like, why don't you just go away? It's like one of those films where...
it's Home Alone, where he wishes that his family weren't.
Basically Home Alone, Matt. however, the mum is trapped in another dimension. Instead of France.
I genuinely think this could be a good movie if her relationship with her kids is terrible, right? Whenever she comes home, she's like, oh, kids, you want to spend some time make a jigsaw? And they're like, shut up, Mom. You don't have any time for us, so we're playing PlayStation, right?
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, kids, come on. And then she's like, no, you're a rubbish mom, whatever. Like, they don't care. Then when she forgets that she's got kids and she doesn't come home, they have, and she starts going off on a holiday, and they've got to try and track her down because they realize they go to her work 2 days later.
Yeah.
And because they're like, where's mom? And then she's like, oh, she's probably just working at the lab again. She's probably fallen asleep in her lab coat again.
Yeah.
And then they go to her lab and find out that there's been an accident and she hasn't come. She hasn't come
back. She's been transported to another dimension.
All right, yeah, if you want.
Yeah. So.
And has forgotten that she has children.
Yeah. So, yeah, that they.
Doesn't make any sense.
Right. I'm adding the transport to another dimension thing because it's got to have an element of the fantastical.
Why?
Because up until this point, it's just a drama.
No, because forgetting, like, because the weird science, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
I'm thinking the race to Witch Mountain, journey to the center of the earth.
That's because you're only choosing fantastical family films. What about Cheaper by the Dozen? What's fantastical about that?
You don't remember the bit in Cheaper by the Dozen where Stephen Martin fights a dragon.
No.
It was an animated dragon. Basically, they just took bits of Pete's dragon and was like, Steve Martin, fight this. And he was like, I don't think I can. And they're like, you've got to do it, Steve Martin. For the good of this company, please fight this dragon.
And Steve Martin says, well, if it means keeping my job to look after my 12 children.
Yeah. Then I'm not sure whether it's the film director that said that or his boss in the film.
It. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a direct quote from the director that they attributed to the capture.
Yeah. So, yeah, the transport to another dimension where it's like a weird kind of Avatar-y, Valerian-y CG world where Millie Bobby Brown, one of the kids from Stranger Things, has to overcome a load of trials.
How do they get there?
I don't know. Maybe they just look at the recipe for the thing that she's making and build it themselves, and then, oh shit, we're in another direction. This is where Mom went.
Right. Of course.
Basically Oz.
Mum's disappeared. First thing we should do, replicate her experiment.
Yeah.
To see if we get the same results.
Yeah, because they look all over the world, right?
Tell you what, they get to the lab. Then they get to the lab, and then her boss is there, and it's J.K. Simmons.
Yeah.
The science, he's called Science Boss. And he says, you know what, kids? I'm glad your mom's not here, because I'd be giving her a piece of my mind. If she's not replicated these results by tomorrow, she's fired and you're all going to be homeless.
So they're like, no, we don't want to be homeless. So they replicate the results.
Yeah.
Boom. Straight into... That's how that happens. Confident writing.
Yeah.
Right. Now we've jumped through that loophole.
And then before he does that, he says, oh, you better find your runaway mom or you're going to all be homeless.
The thing is, right, you're almost sensible. My option was they have looked all over the world. So they eliminate everywhere except... process of deduction, she must be in another dimension. That makes sense, your one.
Yeah.
Mine, a lot of the film would have been just looking in, like, cupboards in China. You know, it's...
Yeah.
So, yeah, they go through, like, a load of weird trials in this universe and realise that their runaway mom has become the...
She's the queen of a civilization.
Yeah, yeah. And they're like, come on, mom, we've got to go back to the real world. It's like, no, I love it here. Everyone is good.
Also, I don't know who you are.
Yeah. Also, I've forgotten who you are. Who are you? Who are you?
And then, but this civilization she's the queen of hates outsiders, right? And she's let two outsiders in because they said that they were her children. Mm. When the guards move in to execute these children, she's like, no! And then suddenly you get the sound effect that they use for everything of both going through a wormhole and remembering memories. That sort of like strange going underwater noise. And then she's like, I remember that I have children again.
Let's go back home, kids.
Immediately.
Film finished.
Yeah.
Runaway mom.
I'm glad we got to spend some time with you, mom. I'm really glad you took us to another dimension there. Really contributed to the story. Got some great thematic links.
Well, maybe the trials are all based on what stuff they did with a mum.
Just get it in the second pass, eh?
Yeah. Yeah, maybe. It's like Labyrinth. But with weirder shit.
The trials in the Labyrinth make sense to the theme of the
film. Well, yeah, and the trials film. In Runaway Mom will make sense to the theme of the film as well. Let's move on.
Labyrinth is about going to another dimension. It's not called Runaway Mom. It's about the Labyrinth. If this film was called Another Dimension, or Mom's Gone to Another Dimension, or Honey, I Went to Another Dimension, I'd understand. Labyrinth is called Labyrinth because they're in a labyrinth.
Right. The labyrinth in Labyrinth, right. There's not much scenes in the labyrinth.
There's plenty of scenes in the labyrinth. It's all in the labyrinth.
There's not.
It's only the bit at the start where she's on a hill and the bit in the Goblin City that aren't in the labyrinth.
Those are the only bits I cared about. Everything in that labyrinth was pointless to me.
Weren't watching closely enough.
Right. There's not, like, for a film called Labyrinth, there's not that many. It's like, it's not all in the labyrinth.
Right, you've got the bit with stone walls, the bit with slightly lower stone walls and guards riding around.
Yeah.
You've got the bit with hedge mazes. You've got the bit that's a load of woods. You've got a bit which isn't over yet and there's tunnels underground.
Yeah.
You've got the bit where they aren't in tunnels underground, but there's like...
There's a swamp, right.
The stone faces. How many labyrinths do you want?
There's the house, right? The house she lives in.
Not a labyrinth. Tell you what, I'll give you that one, Tom. The house she lives in at the start of the film, start and end of the film, is not a labyrinth.
The garden which she's reading that play at the beginning.
It's a park, I think.
Park, whatever.
It's not a labyrinth, though.
Don't care.
No matter what it is, it's not a labyrinth. Don't care, not labyrinth.
Don't care, not labyrinth.
DKNL. It's my new catchphrase. DKNL. Don't care, not labyrinth.
The... Swamp of Eternal Stench.
Yep.
That's a swamp. It's not a labyrinth. Very explicitly not a labyrinth. It's a swamp.
That's fine.
The fire, chili fire gang bit, that's not in a labyrinth.
Okay, yeah. You've now made up approximately 7 minutes of the film.
The ballroom, which is an ungodly amount of the film.
She's still in the labyrinth there. She's just...
She's not.
She is. She's just dreaming about... She's been...
Exactly.
She's been roofied.
Exactly. She's... taken out of the labyrinth, like,
only like spiritually.
Yeah. The M.C. Escher bit,
that is definitely a labyrinth.
It's not,
no matter what you say, that is a labyrinth.
It's not. It's
you could easily get lost in there,
right? The goblin town,
that admittedly is a city and not therefore not a,
exactly,
not a labyrinth.
Right. Hardly any of that film is in the labyrinth.
The rest of the film is in the labyrinth.
Hardly any of that film is in the labyrinth.
You just described five scenes that aren't in the labyrinth.
Exactly. How many scenes did you describe? Four, probably. I don't know. Right. Labyrinth. Not much labyrinth in it. For a film called Labyrinth, you'd expect it to be all labyrinth.
How much running it's away not... is in Runaway Mum?
A lot of running away. She runs away.
She does.
She
gets transported to another dimension. In fact, in this film, there's been no description of anyone running anywhere.
Right, I just wanted to get away from the darkness of what that could have been.
A mum forgetting her children.
It's pretty dark.
Yeah, you know what? Being left home alone is pretty dark.
Yeah.
But you know what? It made a great film.
Why don't we go with that then?
I don't know. Why did you say she got transported to another dimension?
Labyrinth is not set in a labyrinth. Also from Alex, not so working. What is your favourite scene from a film that only shows up in a director's cut? I would imagine.
I'm not sure I know many of these because if I've seen I feel like if I've seen a film once I've kind of seen it. For most films, there are certain films, things like Edgar Wright movies, and these are just films, not films I watched the director's cut of, but because films.
There isn't a director's cut.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's perfect in the first place, but like Eraserhead, Brazil. Brazil, I think, might have a scene.
Is there a director's cut of Brazil?
I think there might be a director's
cut
of Brazil.
The Terry Gilliam film.
Yeah. Because I think the one. The first time I saw Brazil, I saw it on TV. So they might have just cut a scene.
Yes, yeah, fair enough. The TV cut and the director's cut, I guess, would be. Or on a plane.
Although, having said that, yes, there are two versions of Brazil.
Mm.
The thing is, we all got to see the director's cut. And this is a really interesting story.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Is when Terry Gilliam was making Brazil, the studio would not have the ending, right? Mm. He'd made, like, go and watch Brazil, but the ending, I won't spoil it, but it's like, it's a
super
surprise.
It's bleak, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it's bleak, and it is a surprise. And
the studio wanted a happy ending.
And it's very difficult. It is very difficult to pass because you've been fed one line, and it's not like an M. Night Shyamalan twist where everything becomes apparent.
Yeah.
You've got to think through the past half an hour of the film to make sure you know what's going on.
Yeah. It's an ending that makes sense as well for the themes of the film.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's an ending that makes complete
artistically,
sense.
It makes perfect sense. The studio were having none of it.
Because it feels like it could. I remember when we watched it and I said, it could just cut now.
Yeah.
And
but it wouldn't have made
fine.
It wouldn't have nearly have been as good.
No.
It wouldn't have said so much.
Like, I felt as though I think it's about 10 minutes before the end. I was like, cut there. Mm. You've got a happy ending.
Yeah.
Leave it going for the next 10 minutes. You've got a fucking bleak, horrible ending.
And the studio wanted to keep it at that last 10 minutes and keep the happy ending. And
because the happy ending is like overtly cheesy.
Yeah. And so they were going because
to the point of parody.
Absolutely. It would have been hilarious. And nobody would have taken it seriously.
Yeah.
But basically the studio was saying, we're not releasing this until you make a proper happy ending. Mm.
So he shot the happy ending and then just gave the next 10 minutes.
Basically he started shooting the happy ending and then at the time, he was guest lecturing at a local university in America and was secretly showing his cut of the movie in order to the students. And he was using it as a, as he said, teaching aid. Well, anyway, because he was using it as a teaching aid, the studio couldn't stop him, really.
Yeah.
Even though they tried to stop him showing it, they wouldn't let him do any advanced screening because they said the film wasn't finished. Mm. But because he was using his footage as a teaching aid, he then opened up these lectures to the public. Press started getting in, and it was only when he was nominated for an Academy Award for, like, not nominated, but what do they call it? Shortlisted.
Yeah.
For an Academy Award, because because the Academy had seen that thing, that the studio ever let it go out in the condition it did.
Wow, that's incredible.
It's like I can't. Is it called The Story of Brazil? There's a book about it.
Yeah,
fascinating.
Yeah, no. Go watch Brazil because I always just sort of put it off.
Yeah,
because I like Gilliam films, but basically just like any Jim Henson films that aren't Muppets.
Mm.
I find just incredibly hard to watch.
Too whimsical for you.
Too whimsical. I'd say Brazil gets it right while also being sort of like that kind of weird. Like, there are bits that I'm just like, oh, this is a bit sort of boring. Like, and
Brazil is my favourite movie of all time.
Yeah.
Which is like, it is high praise coming from me because I hate films. No.
We've been doing a film podcast for
I didn't
two and
tell
a half
you.
Years.
Sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I
knew that already.
Yeah, you did know. Yeah. you knew I hated films,
I knew you hate films. And to be fair,
films.
To to some degree, I think we both do.
Yeah.
If you listen to this podcast for 2.5 years, I think you'll get a theme of, like, crap, we actually hate movies.
We're just frustrated with some of the stuff that comes out. You're like, this artistic, like, it's such an old medium now, and people still keep getting it wrong.
Yeah.
And there are so many good examples of people doing it right, and it's almost frustrating that it hasn't been got down to a science making great movies.
Because it's just so, like, you watch a film like, what did we go see, Valerian?
Yeah.
And we're like, we know how bad this is.
Yeah.
Like, we can break it down. We broke it down on the way back. It's like, yeah, no, this is bad because of this.
I feel like...
Valerian, by the way, shit.
It's a shocking film. It is an absolutely shocking film. Like, I certainly enjoyed it more than Tom did. Basically because it had Henson-like creatures in the middle. It's
fucking.
But, like, No, it was poor. It was really poor. There was, like, a full half of the movie, the full middle of the movie, I realised when I got back, was a side quest. No bearing on the film.
The Rihanna bit.
No, not just the bit. All the bit trying to find him, like when he goes missing.
Oh yeah.
To when they find him.
Yeah, Valerian goes missing at one point.
The character Dane DeHaan, who is, I will say this officially, the worst actor working today.
Based purely on his performance in Valerian.
Yeah.
Not any other film.
I've seen the trailer for Cure for Wellness, isn't that any?
Yeah. He doesn't look good in that.
No, he certainly didn't capture me.
No. Cara Delevingne. Like,
the fact that Cara Delevingne acted circles around him. Cara Delevingne!
Like, Cara Delevingne is a terrible actress.
She's terrible.
Yet, like you said, she's just completely winning every scene.
And Rihanna upstaged both of them. Right? The songstress Rihanna.
Yeah.
Best known for her hit Umbrella.
Yeah. Ella. A. And her performance in Battleship.
Was. Listen. Her performance in Valerian. Umbrella. A. Triple A.
Yeah.
Performance compared to Dane DeHaan.
Right, it's not great.
No, it's awful.
But it's compared to Dane DeHaan and Cara Delevingne. It's the best performance in the film.
Yeah. She's in it for 3 scenes.
Yeah.
Like, 3 locations she is present. And...
yeah, no,
She's treated as if she's a major character.
Yeah.
Like she's been there the whole time.
She's in it for all of 10 minutes.
Like, they have a proper heart-to-heart.
Yeah. It's weird as shit. Like, I got the feeling that Dane DeHaan's character... Valerian!
Yeah.
I can't believe I forgot his character's name. I got the feeling that, like, they knew each other before.
Yeah.
Because of how familiar they were.
Yeah, exactly. The dialogue was so familiar.
Yeah, but anyway, don't go watch Valerian, because it's... I mean, maybe wait until it's out on Netflix.
Yeah, watch on Netflix.
So you can kind of get it for free.
Having said that...
Watch the first 10 minutes on Netflix.
No, I'll tell you what. Yeah, the first 10 minutes, I would watch in 3D happily. I wouldn't pay, you know, the amount for a movie ticket to go see it. But I'd happily go and watch the first 10 minutes in 3D. Because it did look great.
Yeah.
It looked really good. Like... The first 5 minutes where... No, I think I would say the first 15 minutes are all right. So the first 5 minutes where basically you're just listening to David Bowie and watching the start of Enterprise, Star Trek Enterprise.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. That was a really good bit.
Yeah, it was like the start of a good movie.
Yeah.
because right...
It had Rutger Hauer in it.
Yeah.
Rutger Hauer's in that.
Yeah, yeah.
He never came back into the film. I completely forgot about that, actually. Yeah,
The first 5 minutes of Valerian, right? The opening montage is great for 2 reasons. One, actually 3 reasons. One.
Surprise. No, 4 reasons.
Number one, David Bowie.
Yeah.
Right? Space Oddity. Number two, pretty nice visuals.
Mm.
And stuff. Like, we're looking at the ships going past and stuff, like, all building together. It's a cool idea.
Yeah.
Number three, introduced to a load of random alien races, and they are treated like they are in the rest of the film as throwaway, because make no mistake, don't believe the hype that this is about a city of 1,000 planets. No. The subtitle of this film is a city of Valyrian city of 1,000 planets, and no, it isn't. You get to see three alien races,
yeah,
and none of them ever speak.
Yeah.
But that first 5 minutes, great, because they get treated like they will be the rest of the film, as throwaway. And you're like, that's a really cool design. That guy's got a face in his chest.
Yeah, it was really, yes. Yeah, so, and like some of them, like actual practical effects, which is what I liked.
Yeah, absolutely. That's good as well. I liked the market scenes for the first 15 minutes because they like had some good, again, sci-fi ideas.
Some very good colour.
Yeah, oh yeah, some really nice colour.
Really, really nice colour. But
And then this city of 1,000 planets gets treated, I mean, quite literally, as scenery, as Valyrian rocket boosts his way through all of them.
It doesn't feel lived in, because we don't spend... Like, weirdly, we spend all the time there, but we don't spend any time there.
Yeah.
It's weird.
What's hilarious is when they're approaching this city, because they've been out on a mission, they're coming back, and then they're approaching the city, and then Cara Delevingne says, computer, or whatever her name
tell
is.
Tell us about
this city of 1,000 planets, please.
And been there.
And...
loads of times. They don't need to hear this. It's purely exposition for the audience.
And so it's like, this is Alpha, the city of 1,000 planets. There are lots of people from different races, and here's all the things you need to know about them. We didn't really need to know this much about them because they're never going to be featured again.
It's kind of a show don't tell thing, though.
Yeah.
I reckon if you took that visual, that audio bit out, you'd still get it.
Yeah.
Because the audio was pretty good.
Sure. Then Cara Delevingne says, home sweet home.
Yeah.
Which immediately makes you go, wait, why were you listening to that?
Yeah, it was so dumb.
Because you live here! You live here, so and you dumb. Need your computer to tell you about it.
From Connor Lavelle, we've got Tornado Tantrum.
Tornado Tantrum, that's cool.
That's cool.
That's like,
like, you know, a family disaster movie.
You know in Incredibles,
movie.
No, man. Yeah? You know in Incredibles where that baby's got powers?
Oh, yeah.
But it's a toddler whose superpowers manifest really early.
In a tornado.
In fact, isn't that already a film?
Twister.
There's a film where...
That's the Twister.
There's a toddler in the middle of it.
Yeah, there's a toddler in the middle
around,
of it.
Spinning around, arms and legs outstretched at 45 degree angles. And sort of just spinning round and round and round going...
It's an omnipotent toddler in the middle of that tornado.
Oh, he's just spinning really fast. You know how toddlers sometimes just spin round in a circle really fast and then fall over? Well, this is the one. This is a toddler with such good balance that he kept getting faster and faster and faster and then just turned into a tornado accidentally. But yeah, like, I'm pretty sure there's a film out there where it's like a single mother trying to raise...
A tornado. Raise hell.
A kid who's got, like, superpowers. You know, he can teleport and he can move things with his mind and stuff.
I think there might be one, yeah.
But it's similar to that, but it's like it goes wrong in this sort of like Cheaper by the Dozen style family farce where this kid goes on a tantrum. Yeah, it's Honey, I Blew Up the Kid, really, apart from a tornado rather than a giant child.
Yeah. Oh, and another one for the Yes, Very Clever award we've got from Jeff Beard, The Aristocrats.
Jeez.
It's basically right.
It's that
in this film where cats are the dominant race of the earth.
Yeah.
They've got a lot of pet humans
who are really posh.
And it's basically the plot of The Aristocrats.
Playing piano and saying everybody wants to be a crat.
But it's basically right, the plot of The Aristocrats.
Yeah.
But with people instead of, and like
live action.
Just reversed, so it's
live
cat,
action.
It's cat people and right. real people as the pets.
Live action, and with giant stop motion cats.
No, just footage of walking cats. You know, like from the Monty Python.
No. These cats are giant because we're the pets, right?
Yeah.
Humans are the pets, So they're crawling around on hands and knees.
Mm.
And these cats are enormous, like, claymation almost cats with just, like, facial features, animations. It's terrifying.
Oh.
Because they're that big compared to the humans. They're always shot from below.
And from Jasmine Marr, we've got Trump Family Holiday.
I want to say it's Baron Trump is the focus of this one.
Yeah.
And it's basically, like, Baron Trump.
I love Baron Trump being, like, the sort of voice of reason to an embarrassing dad movie.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's, like, that's the idea.
But, like, the embarrassing parts of, like, Trump are just genuinely, like...
Horrendous acts,
yeah.
Yeah. Baron Trump's just like, oh, dad.
Are you speaking up for white nationalism again?
Oh, dad. Oh,
he rolls his eyes.
Banning transgender people again.
Oh.
Oh, shut up, Baron. I didn't even want you anyway.
Why could you be more like your older siblings? Why could you be more like Ivanka? I mean, I'd date her if she wasn't my daughter. I wouldn't date you if you were my son.
Hey, Baron. Look at Ivanka. I'd date her if she wasn't my daughter. You? Nope.
Nope. You're bad. Bad.
Bad hombre. You're bad hombre.
So weird.
Hey, Baron. Do you have $1 million? I've got $1 million here. You want it? No.
Can't have it. No.
I'll give you a
sad
loan.
Nursery.
I'll give you a loan. Pay it back tomorrow. Sort of me doing Donald Trump is basically me doing a bad Dr. Evil. Give it back tomorrow.
That's what he is. He's a bad Dr. Evil.
He's a bad Dr. Evil.
Donald Trump. A bad Dr. Evil. From Don't Worry About the Government, we've got... In the early episodes, why did Danny DeVito play such a prominent role? Were you watching a lot of It's Always Sunny at the time?
Danny DeVito,
yeah.
Well, you were.
A good answer to that is yes, I was. however, Danny DeVito might be just one of my favourite characters. Just to watch...
Yeah.
Favourite characters, favourite actors to watch.
He's also, like, I don't mean this in a mean way in any capacity, but his name, both, not just, like, because of him,
yeah,
but also because his name is kind of a punchline.
Yeah.
Like, him being cast in a lead is funny. It has been funny for years, decades even. I mean, if you think of, was it Twins?
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Him and Arnie.
Yeah.
Right? They're a punchline together.
Mm.
Like, Danny DeVito is a hilarious comedian. Yeah. Genuinely a very, very funny guy. Seems like he's got his head screwed on and he's an awesome person as well.
Mm.
But, like, it is, he must know. Like, yeah. He gets cast in joke roles.
Yeah, apparently, he's the first one to make fun of himself, like, and laugh. Yeah, he's very in on the joke and stuff. But, like, I must have been watching a lot of It's Always Sunny. I was, however, there was an episode of It's Always Sunny that I watched. I think it was, like, the fourth episode or something.
Mm.
Or maybe... Like, there was an episode that we pitched a film, and I was like, right, Danny DeVito's playing tennis.
Mm-hmm.
And then next series of It's Always Sunny comes along, Danny DeVito's playing tennis. I'm just like, yeah, because that would be a funny thing to watch. Like,
yeah.
I got my wish fulfillment from It's Always Sunny.
They got that, I don't know how they did it, but they had him, you know, when we pitched that deleted episode of him... crawling out of a sofa naked, it was, you know. But seriously, no, I think it's... Why did he feature so prominently?
He's, like, Danny DeVito conjures up a very good visual image.
A distinct image. He's a fun voice to do. He's... And I think definitely in the inception of the In the inception of the game, if you're talking about the very early episodes where you were doing competitively stuff, in the inception of that game, it was very much a case of the first thing it was fun to say was, Danny DeVito.
Yeah, Danny DeVito is sitting on a toilet. Yeah. Like, that would be the opening line for a pitch.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
My pitch. Yeah. Listen to Stinky Rentals.
That's all episode the information 19. You need.
Yeah, that's all the information you'd need on why pitching films with Danny DeVito is a lot of fun. and why we'd do it. Got another one from Dwatg. Thinking back on your movie suggestions, which would you most like to see become a TV serial?
A TV serial? Now,
TV serial, is that like... like a short series?
Oh, Game of Thrones. Game of Thrones.
Oh, cool. Like
anything that's sort of...
We pitch movies, Dwatg.
No, but it is a good question because which one would fit best with an episodic style?
Going back to Stinky Rentals, I want to see Stinky Rentals as a kind of Breaking Bad.
Yeah, yeah, him trying to hold it down.
Yeah.
That'd be pretty good.
Right. If you haven't listened to Stinky Rentals, episode 19, basically Danny DeVito rents out this building to a load of quite wealthy tenants, and then when they leave for work every day, he just goes and shits everywhere in their rooms.
And the resulting kind of series of events is, you know, him getting almost found out, but then he gets
found out, and as I think like Angela Lansbury's about to tell the group at like a group meeting, he shoots her with a sniper rifle.
he gets himself into more and more trouble because he nearly gets found out.
It escalates. I'm thinking it could be like Danny DeVito.
Like, it's a Breaking Bad. I mean, we all know that thing of sort of the tension racks up because every time you get out of one, it's like out of the frying pan into the fire. Every time you get out of one situation, the method by which you get out of it makes you more susceptible to something even higher stakes.
Yeah,
it's a style of TV show like TV making that I'm not a big fan of.
Mm.
Breaking Bad, I stopped at the end of season two because I found it difficult to watch because it was just like, oh my god, I thought the stakes were already high and now he's going to not go to his child's christening or the birth of his child.
That's what happens in Stinky Rentals.
Yeah, he didn't go to the birth of his child.
Because he's shitting in their tumble dryer. That's why. He gets stuck in the tumble dryer and he's like, shit, I gotta get on my son's christening.
For me, I think maybe The Adventures of Tina Turner that we pitched Dave Bulmer's first episode. Yeah. That was actually a TV series that we pitched. It was a cartoon series where Tina Turner gets taken around by a genie played by Tim Curry, who's her limousine driver. He's like a magic limousine driver.
Yes, I remember that.
And he's got to get her killed in order to... the terms of his enslavement as a driver is that... if the person he's driving around dies, then he's free.
Yeah, so he's got to go around to...
He goes to different parts of time where he thinks she's going to die and puts her into dangerous situations.
Mm.
So go back to... We've actually got a playlist on SoundCloud of Dave Bulmer's episode. So I think it's the deleted scenes of the first episode that he was on.
I think so, yeah. Or like extras back then. I'm not sure if we had deleted scenes.
I'm trying to think of any others that I think would...
The thing is, I can't remember them.
...fit really nicely.
Weeks go by and I just especially now I'm not editing them.
Yeah.
I completely forget what we're pitched.
I try to go by the posters, because the posters are easier to remember.
Yeah.
I think those are the two that I would say are best... Mm. Probably best suited to
Stinky Rentals. I remember purely because I think it's my favourite pitch.
Yeah, you were proud of that one.
Yeah, go listen to it. It's good. It's a good.
It's a fun time. It's a fun thing.
And from John Ramsey, we've got. So I have a random, albeit film-related question. Are capes too much of a health and safety risk for superheroes, given their tendency to snag?
I mean, The Incredibles.
Yeah, The Incredibles did that.
Did that bit.
But That's what I thought. However, we yet to see a Marvel Cinematic Universe film where Vision gets sucked into a...
Or Doctor Strange.
Or Doctor Strange. Yeah, yeah.
The two with capes.
Oh,
and Thor. Wow.
Well, Vision famously looks at Thor and goes, right, I'm having a cape. Like, it's a very subtle moment, yeah. But like in Age of Ultron, I think it's like the first few seconds you see of...
I tuned out that film.
He turns to Thor, looks at his cape, and then just a cape magically appears behind him. It's a pretty good moment.
It's pretty cool. I didn't like that film at all. The thing is, I think... Oh, I had a point. Oh, yeah.
I had a point here.
Watchmen had quite a nice... deconstruction of this in the graphic novel. I don't know if it was in the film or not, but the one of the characters, it was like the hangman guy, this one guy basically, the idea was, oh my, like more and more criminals are using guns, what are we gonna do about it? And it's like the cape provides a bigger target, and they miss more frequently because there's like a misdirection aspect of it. So you throw the cape one way, they shoot at where the cape's going, and you go the other way.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's the only... Literally, I'm pretty sure, outside of being a medieval Norse god, I can't think of another reason to have a cape. Unless it's a magic cape that allows you to fly.
Yeah.
So, pretty much, the three characters in the Marvel Cinematic Universe... are covered.
Yeah.
Because one is just like, you can't complain, because, you know, he's also wearing scale mail armour.
Then you move to the DC universe, where Batman is definitely misdirection.
Yeah, oh, clearly. Yeah. And also, like, he wants to be imposing, it's threatening. Yeah.
Superman, however...
I don't think Superman's worried about a snagging cape.
No, well, I mean, yeah, I think it's purely vanity. Cape.
Yeah, I think you might be right.
Yeah.
I think there's something to be said, like his whole costume is supposed to be like a beacon of hope. It's like the shield. Apart from the shield is practical. But like, for instance, those little things on the side of Captain America's hat, what are they for?
In the comic, it's not in the MCU,
yeah.
But it is in the comics. I think it's mainly just a design choice.
Yeah.
That has been taken off in like the Ultimate Captain America and stuff like that. With the MCU, they've based it more off the Ultimate run of Marvel comics.
I think with Superman, they're trying to say, hey, if you can see this kid, you see him in the sky.
Yeah.
Stuff's all right.
Yeah.
Which is tough because obviously with the way that Snyder's treated Superman, nobody in their right mind would see Superman and go, yay. Because, like, if you see Superman, you're gonna die. Anyone who's ever seen Superman is likely dead.
What's
by
that?
Now.
Is it a bird? Is it a plane? No, it's shit.
It's the specter of death.
It's the harbinger of doom. Superman.
I mean, even those people in Batman vs Superman had put skulls on their faces in order to touch him, because they presumably knew they were gonna die.
Yeah. It's just like, yeah, every time Superman appears in the sky, like, you better be fucking terrified.
They're looking in the sky. Oh god, no.
Run. Shit, here he comes. It's Superman.
Save the women and kids. It's Superman.
Hello, just want to say thank you for listening to the Lives of Pitch deleted scenes.
We hope you've enjoyed it. If you have, maybe consider sharing it with your friends on social media, by word of mouth, anywhere really. Maybe put it onto a thumb drive and just throw it at someone. And maybe even reviewing it on wherever you got it. If you find it somewhere on iTunes or Acast or wherever, maybe review it there. 5 stars, thumbs up, give everyone the heads up.
Like I said before, thank you. Cheers.
Right.
Bye.